This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Harry Dent. Harry is the founder of Dent Research, an economic forecasting firm specializing in demographic trends. He's been the author of many books, most of which I've read, The Great Boom Ahead, The Great Depression Ahead, Demographic Cliff, and the most recent one, The Sale of a Lifetime, How the Great Bubble Burst of 2017 to 2019 Can Make You Rich. Mr. Dent, we welcome you to our show.
Yeah, good to be back, Bruce.
I've got to say three things that I really like about your titles. First of all, that you land on both positive and negative sides of the equation. That's unusual. Number two, that you have extreme titles. There's no doubt about your conviction and no way to escape if you're wrong. And number three, you apparently don't need anyone to agree with you. And I respect that a lot.
Yeah, Bruce, I was talking at a gold conference, and I was announced as the contrarian's contrarian. So like we're even more contrarian than most of the gold people who do see a collapse to some degree due to massive debt in our country and stuff. But we see deflation instead of inflation, and we see falling gold prices instead of rising.
It's tough to stand in front of an audience that is polar opposite. In our world in California, we're known for taking a look at real estate trends and writing reports about that. And in 06, I had a chance to debate in front of the California Builders Association with a title of a report called The California Crash, and you can imagine how popular that was that day.
Yeah.
So there's some times that you just you have to say what needs to be said. Demographics. The reason why I like it is it makes sense to me. I can understand that it's not completely an accurate science, but it makes sense to me that there'll be times during my life that I'm more likely to do something and not other times. So. Demographic, is it more accurate on outcome than timing?
Yeah, well, it's the most predictable thing in economics, that people do spend more money, earn more money once they enter the workforce around age 20, between high school and college for most people, into their mid to late 40s. This is something very predictable, and with this indicator alone, a 46-year lag on the birth index in the United States and other major countries, I was able to predict in the late 80s, 1988-89, before Japan collapsed, that they were going to go down for over a decade, and the United States and Europe and the rest of the world was going to have the greatest boom in history. I mean, just one simple indicator saw the biggest changes in economics we've ever seen in our lifetime. So it is very powerful, and inflation follows demographic trends on a whole different indicator, more like 20-year lag, and so people keep thinking there's these black swans, and we saw the collapse in markets and all these things. These things were not unpredictable; they were actually highly predictable. It's just economists don't understand demographics because they're not trained in it. That's simple. They don't understand demographics. And demographics, I mean, the average person drives our economy for reasons they can understand by understanding their own simple life cycles as they age. So it's really a great thing that people can see the future when economists say, oh, no, who knows what's going to happen after the next election or the next black swan event. There are no black swan events, They are predictable when things are going to turn the other way.
What would be the proudest prediction you think you've ever made as far as Man, I'm glad I made that. That was very correct. And I'm also going to ask you the opposite of that.
Yeah. I'll give you both of those because, I mean, the I'm more known for predicting, you know, Dow 10,000 by 2000 in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, seeing the incredible bubble boom of the 1990s from the baby boomers. But my best prediction was in 1989 saying Japan was going to collapse for 12 to 14 years.
Because at the time they were the complete darling of the world.
Yeah, people thought Japan was going to become the number one country in the world, overtaking the United States. And we said, first of all, no, the opposite, because their baby boom is collapsing. Their bubble boom is going to collapse. But it was impossible, simply demographically impossible, for Japan to overtake the United States unless they were going to have $120,000 GDP per capita income, three times what they were back then. So, you know, that was the best. And the worst that I, you know, suffered for a long time was predicting the Dow was going to go to 35,000 by, you know, 2007, 2009, because we saw after the first bubble burst in 2000, 2002, which we predicted would happen, that you know, we would come back and see a second bubble in stocks. It would be just as strong as the first one, and it wasn't. And the reason we missed that forecast and overdid it was simply because, hey, 9/11. And out of that mistake in forecasting, I found two incredibly powerful new cycles, the geopolitical cycle every 35 years up and down, and the 30-year commodity cycle. And both of those cycles have allowed us to predict all types of things since then that have happened. And so, you know, I tell people, look, I mean, we've got new indicators. We see the world differently than economists. And when something doesn't go the way our best indicators say they will, I don't go into denial. I dig in and say, oh, well, what did we miss? And I always find new indicators. And I tell you, we've got now four or five long-term indicators that when you put them together, they all point down in the next 3 or 4 years, and they all say, hey, we're not going to see a Trump revival here, even though he's going to do a few good things here or there. We're going to see the greatest crash, greater than we saw in 2008 and 2009, and investors can basically rely on knowing that the trends are down, not up, for 3 or 4 years. And when they do go down, that's where we're going to get the sale of a lifetime, like 1932-33 in the Great Depression, where real estate, stocks, commodities, everything you could have invested in was on sale at 20, 30 cents on the dollar.
It's a great title, by the way. You're trying to get across something that's a very negative outcome, but with a positive ending if you land on the right side of it.
Yeah, that's right. If you see it coming, which nobody will, because economists are not worrying about it, politicians are all saying, including people like Trump, oh, we can turn this around by cutting taxes. I'm sorry. Cutting taxes will do nothing, and I mean nothing, to turn around our economy down the road, because businesses and consumers have already overspent, overborrowed, overexpanded in the great bubble boom. We have an excess of supply. We don't need supply-side economics at a time like this. We need to restructure debt like a Chapter 11 reorganization for businesses. That's what government needs to do. Somebody needs to step up and say, hey, we overdid this thing. We had a great bubble. Now we need to restructure debt to take burdens off of consumers and businesses that overborrowed, and force the banks to write down these debts instead of creating zombie banks that keep this bubble going. So I, when that happens, people are going to be surprised that, yes, it's going to be painful, like the early 1930s, but if that's the one way to take the burdens off have consumers and businesses. We all have too much debt, and we have too much capacity.
You live in Tampa, Florida, right?
Well, I know I did. I'm in San Juan.
Okay, San Juan, Puerto Rico. Okay. Well, Florida had a sale on real estate in 2008 plus, and California had a sale where I lived. Honestly, we were buying properties at 25% of what they sold for. So why wasn't that good enough?
Well, because the government stopped that repricing of the bubbles and assets from happening fully. They threw $13 trillion collectively, globally, in the world economy and free money, zero interest rates, negative interest rates, free money basically, and they stopped the reset of prices. So real estate has to go back to what I call January of 2000 prices or a bit lower to raise the bubble. Stocks have to go back to like 4,000 to 5,000 on the Dow to erase the bubble. And that's what has happened every single time in history. Bubbles go back to where they start or a bit lower. And so government stopped that. Now, if real estate had gone down even further, we would see even greater prices to take advantage of. So I tell people, look, it's a blunt indicator, but it's the best one since real estate is so much more varied locally and you know, regionally. What was your real estate? What was your home or your office complex or whatever you're invested in? What was it worth in January of 2000? And I think people are going to be surprised to see how much downside there is left now that real estate has bounced back near its highs again, a second bubble. And the same for stocks. Like what were your stocks worth in late 1994 when that stock bubble started? I mean, so that's a big downside ahead.
Help me understand, and say in 2008, I almost would land on the spot where real estate was self-destructive in the sense that we allowed so many people to get financing that was ridiculous, as opposed to the demographics of that moment, because you had baby boomers 8 years younger than they are right now. Going forward, I could see more of a case for the demographic issue. So was it a demographic cause problem in 08, or was that a financial issue?
Well, I tell you, it was demographics, because real estate peaks ahead of the broad economy, as it did in 1925, ahead of the great stock bubble burst in 1929 for it. So real estate peaked first in my late 2005, early 2006, as I warned in my newsletter, and people thought I was crazy. But the real problem was not just demographics peaking in the demand for homes from baby boomers. It was more so that we had a bubble in finance, that people could get zero down loans at very low interest rates. The credit allowed for the average household tripled, you know, between 2000 and 2006 in the bubble. So it was a debt bubble, and debt bubbles in history, and we especially show this in the new book, The Sale of a Lifetime. Debt bubbles always create financial asset bubbles in things like stocks and real estate and even commodities, and then those bubbles burst when the debt behind them starts to collapse. And of course, that started with real estate in 2006, the subprime crisis. And now we've got a whole nother level of real estate debt and stock bubbles and things around the world are going to burst. And we're going to see, Bruce, I show in this new book, there's like $300 trillion now of financial assets in loans, mortgages, stocks, bonds around the world that has gone up another $60, $70 trillion since the last bubble. And this, a lot of these financial assets are simply going to disappear. And I'm predicting $120 trillion, give or take, will disappear from the financial markets and wealth in our world in the next 3 to 6 years. And that's going to cause deflation in prices and everything from stocks to real estate to, you know, milk and corn.
At what age of the dominant generation do negative things start to occur? And do you consider the baby boom generation the dominant generation in the United States still?
Yes, yes. And around the world, you know, the baby boom peaked first in Japan in 1996, and they've been in a downturn ever since, and their bubble burst first, and nobody understood that it was demographics, not just, you know, excessive finance that caused that. The U.S. peaked in 2007, as we predicted 20 years before it happened, and Europe in 2011, of course, they had their crisis then. So the world is seeing declining demographics in the wealthiest nations, and it's going to continue so until at least the early 2020s before it turns back up. And that's when the emerging world outside of China is going to dominate growth. And we'll never see growth like we saw from 1983 to 2007 in the United States or in Europe or the developed world. So demographics is causing a demographic cliff around the world, from Japan, the U.S. to Europe, and there's nothing Trump or somebody can do to wave a magic wand and create more jobs and change this trend. It's predictable, and it's powerfully to the downside. All we've done is print free money to like a drug, make us feel better while this is happening, and that is going to backfire on us as well.
What influence, and I guess I'm trying to think of where's the tipping point. In 2006, I thought real estate could very well be the issue, and I don't feel that way. I feel right now, so I feel like there could be an outside influence that causes all of this stuff to cascade. So what's your take on the event, if you will? Is China the event, them having a problem, their GDP changing radically because of the situation they've created, or what else is there?
Well, you know, there's two major events, and it's not going to be the United States. We did lead the last downturn. We were the trigger for the global debt crisis because of our subprime crisis. But that was only a trigger. That was just four states, California, you know, Arizona, Nevada, Florida.
Right.
That triggered a debt crisis. This time, it is going to be number one. It's going to be Italy becoming the next Greece and the next crisis in Southern Europe and Germany, by the way, that has the worst demographics, more like Japan in the 1990s. Than any other country. And then secondly, what you just said, China. China has a real estate bubble that makes ours look like nothing. I mean, massive savings, 50 to 75% of income in China. They put it all in real estate, 75% versus stocks and other assets compared to, you know, 25 to 35% here. They've got a bubble. They built, overbuilt everything in their country with top-down government planning, the worst thing ever in history. Economists think China is the new model of state-driven capitalism. I'm saying China is going to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that governments don't drive economies better than free market economics and capitalism.
I got to tell
so
you,
they've overbuilt and they're going to collapse. But that'll be the last thing that happens. I think that a crisis in Italy and Europe will hit somewhere in the next several months, and that will trigger the next global debt crisis. Now, because now we have $70 trillion more in debt than we had before the last one.
I saw a show on China, and they were there. You know, the ghost cities that they build, and this was one particular city, and I wasn't looking at a rural city. I was looking at something that looked like Manhattan. High-rise condos that were $500,000, but when the interviewer said what the median income of the area was, I completely couldn't comprehend how you would put a value on what was there, because they built high rises where the $500,000 price tag was attached to these luxury condos, and the median income of the area was $4,000 a year.
Exactly. And that's what we look at globally. We look at real estate compared to income. And China is the most overvalued in the world. And Hong Kong, even with higher incomes there, is the very most overvalued. There's no question about it. China's real estate bubble is the greatest in all of modern history, and it will be the greatest collapse. And you have to realize that in the leading edge markets, whether it be San Francisco or London or Vancouver or Sydney, Australia, or Singapore, it's the Chinese wealthy foreign buyers that are driving up the highest prices in these areas. And when their bubble collapses, like the Japanese did in the early 90s, there it's going to be a sucking sound around the world, especially in the highest priced English speaking cities where Chinese and other immigrants send their kids to get an education and migrate.
I'll give you an example of what you just said. I was speaking in front of an audience in San Jose to a Chinese group of investors. And Q&A afterwards, gentleman said that he had come from Beijing and he had brought $1 million, bought a home in San Jose. It was now worth $2 million. He was going to hold it until it was worth $7 million. And I remember thinking, that's an awfully optimistic point of view. But then I realized where he came from, that actually had happened. And what happens when you have extraordinary success, at least is unfortunately what I've done in the past, is think, gosh, I'm really good at this. No matter what I touch, this is going to happen. And you get pretty cavalier about where you spend that money because you just think it's going to work. And to me, that's a scary thing.
You know, it is. And I always compare it to like a crack addict or something. Like, you know, you get high when you're on a drug that enhances your state for whatever reason. And this is what bubbles are in stocks and real estate stuff. You basically get delusional. You think, oh my gosh, this stuff can go up forever. People have been saying for decades, all of my life, real estate can't go down. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I've studied history. Real estate does go down. It bubbles just like stocks do. And when it goes down, it's more painful because real estate is largely financed on mortgages and debt, whereas most stock purchases and commodity purchases are not. So the worst downturns in history are when real estate collapses from a bubble. And, of course, that happened to a lesser degree in the 1930s. But the greatest bubble burst in the United States, all of history, was when the Midwest and Chicago boomed because of the canal bubble in the 1820s and 30s, and everybody moved westward, and the government was giving away free land for very low, well, not free, but very low prices, and the government was financing loans, just like we've done here recently, you know, easy Freddie and Fannie Mae loans and stuff. They had a bubble, and it burst. And Chicago went up 44,000% in like over a decade. I mean, and then collapsed like 97%. And that's the worst thing that can happen. And so real estate is, to me, an arena where we're going to see the biggest drop when you adjust for mortgages and the debt against it, and where people are going to be able to buy, you know, stuff they really value, because everybody loves real estate. And stocks are, you know, yeah, they go up, they go down, but people love real estate because you can live in it and use it. We're going to see bargains in real estate like we've never seen before.
Harry, we have to end this segment. Let me end this segment. We have another segment to go. We'll pick up right there in real estate. We've been speaking with Harry Dent. His new book, The Sale of a Lifetime, without recommending the outcomes, because we're going to disagree on some of that always. But I always read what he writes because it's fascinating stuff. Harry, thank you for joining us.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.